Hey Thriver, Jess here. Welcome to the February 2015 workshop for the Thriver Circle. This month, I'm going to take you through the 10 fundamentals that you need to get on top of if you want to be selling online. And there's a lot of questions in this one, so you know, make sure you go and download the slideshows from the workshop page so that you know you have a copy of them and you can work through them in your own time, as well as just working through them as much as you can while we're talking through the workshop. And don't forget, you can download the audio and listen to it you know, when you're exercising or cleaning or making stuff, and that'll help you kind of think through this stuff. If you can listen to it a couple of times, kind of you'll pick out something new every time. So hopefully, if you've been wanting to sell online, or you are selling online but you really don't feel like you've got your feet under you, this will be a really good workshop for you getting started. So let's go.
Okay, so selling online, the fundamentals, what you need to know to get yourself set up and ready to sell online and hopefully make a profitable business out of it. So if you've been selling at markets or selling retail, some of this stuff you may have thought through may already be familiar to you, but there is a lot here that is you know, special, or things that you really need to think about when you sell online that you may not have thought about previously in different iterations of your business. So, are you ready to sell online? Do you feel confident that you have a good product, that you have good photography, all of that sort of stuff? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Hopefully, my aim is that by the end of this workshop, you will understand all of the things you need to get started, and you'll feel a lot more confident that you've kind of got a handle on everything and you can dive in and give it a go. So, let's kick off with what you need. Number one, obviously you need a product. So you may have products already. If you've sold at markets and you've sold retail, you'll have some sort of idea of what works and what doesn't in those settings. The thing you need to remember is that those are actually quite different settings to selling online. You know, when I don't sell at markets very often, but when I do, I tend to find that the stuff that sells at markets is actually quite different to the stuff that sells well online. Now, for my business, I guess that makes a bit of sense, because when I'm selling at a market, generally people want to buy something then and there that they can take away with them. So generally, like a pair of earrings or a necklace or something like that. Whereas online, the vast majority of my sales are actually custom ring orders. And obviously someone can't come up to my market stall and go, "Ooh, I'd like that ring in a size 10. Can you just whip that up for me?" So I don't tend to sell many rings at my market stall, because rings depend on size. But I sell, you know, the bulk of my business and the bulk of my income online comes from selling rings, mostly wedding rings. So think about that, you know, when you're getting started to sell online. Think, okay, well, do these products lend themselves well to selling online? You may have had ideas for things like a custom product that, you know, didn't really work in another environment, but that will work really, really well online, because you can have that backwards and forwards with your customers. And, you know, if you've done custom work, you've probably had people approach you and in, you know, at market stalls and ask you about that. But by selling online, you can make that and grow that into a really huge part of your business. Another thing to consider about selling online is that if you've only been up to this point doing one-of-a-kind items, it's going to be a much tougher road if you just continue down that path. The reason for that is that if you're selling just one-of-a-kind items, you're not just spending the time making the item anymore. You've also got to spend all that extra time getting it online. So you have to take photos, you have to edit photos, you have to write a description, you have to come up with a title, you have to come up with keywords, you have to you know, sit down and do the work of actually uploading everything to your website or to Etsy or Made It or whatever you're using for your business. That's a lot of extra time, and it adds up. So my advice is always try to think of a reproducible version of your product. Now, by reproducible, you know, if you go to my shop, everything I sell is a reproducible product. So what I do is I come up with an idea, I'll make a prototype, and when I'm happy with the prototype and I'm happy that I can replicate that thing almost exactly, then I will put it in my store. And that means that I only have to do the extra work, the photography and editing and writing and all that sort of stuff once, and I can then sell that product over and over again. Now, my best-selling product is an oxidized sterling silver wedding band, and I have sold hundreds of those. I don't even know how many I've sold. It's a lot. I end up making many of them every week. And, you know, if I had to go through the effort of uploading all that stuff over and over again, I would have so much less time to work on all the other aspects of my business. Now, that's not to say you can't do one-of-a-kind pieces. Of course you can. There's nothing wrong with that. But I want you to think of reproducible pieces in terms of your bread and butter. You know, you're here because you want to make some sort of level of profit from your business. If you're happy to work, you know, and only do one-of-a-kind designs, you've got to realize that your ceiling, you know, your production ability and the time you have in relation to the amount of products you can make is going to be lower than someone that's doing reproducible products, because they're not doing all this extra work every single time they sell something. So if you can, you know, look at what you make, look at your work and go, okay, how can I take what I'm already doing and make these things reproducible? You might already be making stuff that you can make reproducible. You know, if you're making cushions with the same fabric, easy. You just can make that over and over again with the same fabric. You can make it a limited edition if you only have, you know, 5 cushions worth of fabric, and that's cool too. That's kind of a nice midpoint between one of a kind and reproducible. And play on that. Like, always, you know, always use that sort of terminology when you're listing something. Say if it's one of a kind, say if it's a limited edition, because you can charge more for those because of the scarcity factor. So try to come up with some reproducible designs. If you can't, try to come up with some limited edition designs. And third tier is one of a kind designs. And if you are doing a lot of reproducible work, but you still really want to do those one of a kinds, make them special, you know, charge a lot more money for them. They're a special one-off piece, and that's an awesome thing. And there'll be people out there who want to pay you for something exclusive. So, here's some more questions on the product angle. Do you have a product that is easy to ship? Now, that is a key point when you're selling online. Obviously, you have to post it. And so, depending on the size and the weight of your product, postage is potentially a big hurdle for you if you're selling online. Again, it may be a case of, can I make it smaller? Can I make it lighter? Can I make it flatter? In my world, everything kind of goes by the slot of doom, as we call it. It's when you send a parcel, if it's under 2 centimeters high and within a certain dimension, it can go as a larger letter rather than a parcel here in Australia, which makes it way cheaper to send it both domestically and internationally. So most of my stuff can go as a large letter, and that allows me to keep my postage costs down, which especially for international orders means I get more people buying from me as opposed to buying from someone else whose postage is 4 times the price. So think about how you can keep your postage or get your postage as low as possible. That being said, don't ever skimp on it. Like, you need to get that money. So either charge your postage, you know, as a postage cost. The benefit of that, of course, being is people don't take fee, like PayPal don't take fees out of that. Or include it partially in your product cost, but just make sure you're covering that cost. Otherwise, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot in the long term. Don't undercharge on postage. So do you have a product that's easy to ship? Or can you modify your current product so that it becomes more easy to ship for selling online? Or perhaps just part of your product, your range is going to be for your online sales, and then you'll have other stuff that you sell to boutiques or at markets and stuff like that. And that's cool too. So do you have a product or a product line that is reproducible? If you don't, sit down and have a think about how you can make that happen and see if you can design one. It might even be something really new. Sometimes creativity thrives under constraints. So like for me, I try to actually design my stuff so it will fit through the slot of doom, literally, so it will be at a flat pack and go post overseas for a lot cheaper than if I made it over 2 centimeters high and I had to send it in a box. And that might sound a bit mercenary to some of you, but it actually means that my products are all very in line with each other, and it has a very cohesive force on my product line. And I don't mind that. I don't mind having some constraints. Of course, I break that rule Of course I do. But, you know, there's something I really want to design and make, I'll make it. I kind of try to keep most of my stuff within those boundaries to make it easier for me to grow my business. And the other thing about the products, why would somebody buy yours over somebody else's? Okay, you need to be able to answer that question. You need to go, why is yours the best for whatever reason? So you make candles, you have the most unique smells, you have the strongest scents, you have the most beautiful jars, whatever it is, you know what sets your product apart from other people's, so you can actually get that across in all of your marketing and when you're talking about your product. So product, number one, most important thing. Number two, you need a niche, because your customer is not everybody. And this is a mistake we all make when we start out. If we don't have any business experience, we just go, people say, oh, you know, who's your stuff for? Oh, it's for anyone. It's not. And the more specific you can get with your niche, you know, your ideal customer, the better. Because it not only helps you, again, gives you creative constraints to focus your design and focus your product development, but it also makes you able to tell a stronger story. And it helps you to speak directly to those people one-on-one. You know, you find out what they need, you know what they want, and you can sell them what they need and want. So you have that real strong connection with the people in your niche. So, of course, the question is, who is your ideal customer? What need are you fulfilling for your ideal customer? And what is already out there that's already fulfilling that need? I mean, I make jewelry. There is probably not literally a billion, but you know what I mean. There are millions of jewelry stores and jewelry brands out there in the world. Why would somebody choose mine? What need am I fulfilling? What niche am I aiming my products towards that will connect with my products? And for me, the majority of my sales, as I said earlier, are wedding rings and sterling silver wedding rings. So who picks sterling silver wedding rings? Well, usually young, you know, slightly hippie, eco-conscious couples, because it's all made with, you know, recycled sterling silver. People who are a little bit, they're not conventional, they're not treading the normal path of, oh, we'll just go to the local jeweler and buy a gold ring and that's all we're going to do. They probably already like to buy handmade. They probably care about connection and community and all those sorts of things. So, you know, I know in my head I can visualize what my ideal customers for these products look like and, you know, where they live and what they wear and what they care about. So knowing those things puts you in really good stead for actually developing your products and your branding and your marketing so that you're connecting with the people in your niche. Number three, a brand. Because you don't want to be a commodity. Now, what's the difference between a brand and a commodity? Bernadette Jewa, in her book, The Fortune Cookie Principle, I think it's in that book, outlines the difference between a brand and a commodity. So a brand is a product plus meaning. And a commodity is a product without any meaning. So as an example, a commodity would be, you know, batteries or, I'm trying to think of things that would be just a commodity because there's actually a lot of things that could be commodities, but they've branded themselves so well that they've actually become a brand. Even things like, you know, shampoo and stuff like that. If you think shampoo, I think Pantene. Right? I don't use Pantene, but I've grown up with their ads on TV and so they're a brand to me and they in my head, they have a certain feel and a certain look and they represent a certain thing in my mind because they've cultivated that brand over the years. And, you know, that brand is obviously not for me. It doesn't resonate with me because I'm not a customer. But you don't want to just be a commodity. And what happens when you're just a commodity is that you compete on price rather than meaning. Okay, so this is what happens when you get, you know, things like, you know, the big box stores and they all compete on downward pressure with price and things get cheaper and cheaper and people working in horrible conditions in Asian countries get paid less and less because of this horrible downward price pressure of commodities. And it's a terrible cycle and it's not something we want to be encouraging, especially in the handmade community. because we know how much work and love goes into our what we make, and we need to get that across. And that is the brand story. That is what you're telling the world about why you make what you make, what you make, how you make it, what difference it makes in the world, what is it going to do for you, the customer. You know, all of those sorts of things become part of your brand story. You have to have, you know, you have to build that emotional connection with people. People care about brands. They feel connected to them emotionally. And so that's how you're going to build a fan base, you know, loyal customers, by building that brand story and then reinforcing that with awesome customer service. So think about what your brand represents and how you can get that across in everything you do. So I've just got a couple of little tips here for things that you can think about to kind of try to solidify at least the kind of real fundamental basics of what your brand looks like and feels like. So what are three key words that sum up your brand? Three words that you could use to describe what you do and what you make and who you are. Think about what three key colors would describe your brand. You know, is it cool, warm, vibrant, understated, modern, frilly, girly, masculine? You know, and, you know, those are keywords, but what colors would represent the feel of your keywords? And also, the next one is, what are your three key feelings? What sort of emotions and feelings do you want to be evoking when people come across your brand? Something like, I went shopping the other day and got some new exercise clothes from Lorna Jane, which, if you're not an Australian, is a big activewear chain here in Australia. And, you know, you walk in the store and everything's super bright and super, you know, super in your face, and all the people in there are wearing the Lorna Jane and they're all upbeat and energetic, and, you know, the t-shirts have, you know, positive uplifting slogans on them, and, you know, it all works together to build this kind of happy upward vibe about, and you know, the brand, and she's really good at branding, is it's not just fitness, it's, you know, living well and healthy and lifestyle and having fun and all that sort of stuff. And it's a women's activewear brand. So whereas something, you know, there are other brands like Nike, which is much more like serious sports brand, you know, like you're just do it, you know, kick your ass. Whereas Lorna Jane's more like, yeah, go for it, do it, but have fun and enjoy your life. Don't take it all so seriously. So, you know, think about what your brand is putting across to your customers in that way. And what sets you apart from all the other people making stuff similar to what you make? And your branding is what will do that. Your products and your branding are what will help set you apart. And of course, the last thing is, why should we care? Like, as a customer, why would I care about your brand? Why would I care about your story? Why would I care about your product? You have to weave a tale for me, weave a story, and make me feel something. What is it that you're trying to give me, or how are you trying to make my life better? So these are all questions you need to be able to answer when it comes to your brand. Number four is a goal. Because without it, you're flailing around aimlessly. What is it you're trying to achieve with your online business or your online part of your business? You know, have goals. And you should have, you know, the best goals are the SMART goals. So they're specific and measurable and time bound and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, those are the best sort of goals to have. But there are different types of goals. You know, there are emotional goals, and there are financial goals, and there are intellectual goals. And there are also goals with, you know, who you want to reach, who you want to connect with, what you want your business to be in the world, and all of those sorts of things. So let's start with, why are you doing this? And if you did last month's workshop already, so if you haven't, probably best to go back and do that one first, because it'll help you to answer this question. Why are you doing this? What's your motivation? So I'm not going to go much more into this one. Like I said, go back and do January 2015's workshop, and that's all about your why. Number two, though, is really important. What is your definition of success? What is your definition of success? Not what other people say success is, or what you think success should be, you really need to think about what is your definition. So is it, you know, for me, my definition of success is being able to wake up every morning and be what I like to call the mistress of my own destiny. I wake up every day and I'm in charge of my life. I have the freedom to do what I want. I have the privileged position of being able to help other people by sharing my knowledge. I'm successful. I don't make $1 million a year. I don't care. That's not my goal. That's not my definition of success. Some people's definition of success is financial. They want to, you know, they won't be successful until they make that first million or that first 100,000 or whatever it might be. But what is your, what do you care about? What's going to make this worthwhile for you? What are you trying to achieve? So what's your definition of success? And if you don't already know your answer to this, this is probably one of the most fundamental questions I'm going to ask you today. So if you don't know your answer, I want you to pause this workshop and I want you to think about this and I want you to write something down now. Okay, you're back with me. Awesome. Now, just pausing there again. If you would like to share your definition of success, I would love to read it, and I'm sure the other Circle members would love to read it as well. So please share it with us in the comments of the workshop post and or on the Facebook group as well. Again, like anything, you know, we cover or we talk about, it's up to you. If you feel like you want to keep it to yourself, keep it private, no problem. But if you want to share it and help, maybe help other people, you know, by, you know, we help each other by learning and seeing what other people think. You know, it might be if you've been, you know, in a traditional business setting that's really focused on financial success, it may be a real shock to think, well, actually, hey, that's not necessarily what I want to achieve. You know, sure, I need to make money. I'm running a business, but is that my end goal? Is that what's most important? It might not be. So you need to know your answer. So let's keep going. A goal, dream numbers. Dream numbers are always nice. What is your dream number? For me, the last few years, I had probably a year or two, I kind of had this, I want to make $100,000 in a year, like gross income, hit that magic number. I just, you know, sound like a nice round number, make six figures, you know, and I achieved that last year and that was absolutely awesome. And obviously that's gross income, not the amount you keep, but you know, it was just, okay, so that's my gross income goal. And now I'll shift that to make that my profit goal. So the money I do keep, let's next time round, let's aim for $100,000 to keep. And then if I hit that amount of money, I know that I'm making a good amount of money to support my family, to travel when I want, and to be able to give back as well. But you know, that's cool. That's kind of my dream number. I don't dream about making $500,000 or $1 million. Because my lifestyle doesn't really need that much money. So, you know, yours might, maybe you do. Maybe you're like, hey man, I want to become financially free, financially independent. I want to build this handmade business. I want to expand it. I want to get it to the stage where it goes beyond being a handmade business. Or, you know, something like Dinosaur Designs, right? They're a huge global business now. They have shops in like New York and all sorts of places, but they still work out of a studio in Sydney where all their makers work, and they're all their stuff's still handmade. So that's a really good example of balancing the two things. You know, you can have a big, global, successful company while still having stuff that's handmade. It just might not be you making it. So, you know, what's your dream number? You know, numbers in financial senses, numbers in sales sense, numbers in that, you know, in 5 years or 10 years, I'll be able to grow my handmade business into a company and sell it, whatever it is. It's up to you. It's all up to you. So think about what your dream numbers are going to be. And the last one, and I like this one, when will you know you've made it? When will you know? When will you wake up in the morning or be sitting there and suddenly realize, holy mackerel, I've made it. I'm here. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. I've reached success, or what success means to me. And I think, you know, whenever you achieve some level of success or you reach some sort of goal, you know, if you're the sort of person who's interested in business and interested in striving after things, you've probably got something else lined up already. But it's nice to have that kind of milestone to go, hey, when it comes to this dream number or this milestone or this piece of definition of success, I've made it, and you can really celebrate that and enjoy it. So number 5, stellar photography. You've probably heard me say this before, and you will hear me say it again. Because when you sell online, photos are everything. They are so important. And if there's one thing, if you don't get it right, will really negatively impact your business, it's this. Because it's a visual world. You're selling a physical product that people can't touch, they can't smell it, they can't pick it up, they can't turn it over, they can't try it on. Okay, they're buying online. With your photos, you need to tell that story. You need to show all of those things through the medium of a photo. So your photos really need to be really, really good. Now, I don't want to scare people off who are like, oh, I have no idea. I mean, my original photos were terrible, truly terrible, but I learnt and I experimented and I tried and tried and tried and tried and tried over and over again until I finally, after years, reached a point where I was reasonably happy with my photos. And I don't think you're ever 100% happy with your photos. There's always something you go, oh, maybe I could tweak that or whatever it is. But there's a certain level you need to attain and there's certain standards that you need to reach to make sure that your photos can actually compete with other people's photos as well. So number 1, do your photos have the wow factor? Is there something about them that people go, wow, when they see it? That just kind of stands right out, pops out of the screen, captures their attention. You know, is it the styling? Is it the lighting? Is it the environment, the background? You know, or if you look at really good, well-branded, successful online businesses, handmade businesses, their photos will tell a story and their photos will be very cohesive and all fit together beautifully. And they'll give you a feel for what the business is about. Number 2, or the next thing, is do they stand out from the competition? You know, when you compare your photos to other people's photos of similar products, do they stand out? A nice way to do this is if you have an Etsy store, is to, you know, just go search on Etsy for your product and in the search results, see how your product compares to other people's. You can do the same on Google search too, search for images of your products and see how it compares to other people's products. So you really want to try to have photos that stand out in some way from the competition so people are drawn to your photos and click on them. Obviously, you know, you won't necessarily always be head and shoulders above everyone else, but you do need to at least have the same level of wowness or the same level of awesomeness as your competitors. So the next thing is, do they mesh with your branding? Okay, so we talked a little earlier about, you know, your colors and those sorts of things. Do your photos mesh with that feel that you're trying to get across to your customer? You know, are your backgrounds and your styling and things like that. Like my jewelry photos are all very simple. My backgrounds are all very simple. I don't have props and things like that because my brand is silver simplicity, ethereal silver simplicity. I don't want anything else in the photo. I want it to all be very simple and clean and you know, modern feeling, but also feeling a little bit warm as well, because there's that eco element in there. And that's why, you know, the last year I started using some wood from around my property as a background, and that's worked nicely, I think, with the other backgrounds I have as well. So do your photos mesh with your branding? And do you have all the photos you need? So, you know, there is a certain suite of photos you need for your products. You need a close-up, especially if there's detail. For example, a fabric, you want, and it has a pattern. You want a close-up photo that shows people the pattern in detail. There's a full product shot, so a shot of the whole product in one frame. There's, you know, angled shots, so the product from different angles. There's the back of the product, if necessary, or the inside of the product, or whatever it may be. The product in use, so for me, jewelry being worn, or on a model, or at least being held in my hand. So use and scale. And they can be the same photo, or they may not be. So a scale photo is something that shows your product in a real-world environment where you would find it, and it shows people what size it is immediately. Because it does happen, if you don't have a scale photo, people won't necessarily read the measurements. And they'll see a picture on a, you know, white background or whatever, and they'll go, oh, it's this big. They'll just envisage in their head what size it is, and then they'll get it, and it'll be bigger or smaller than they envisaged, and they'll be disappointed. So you just want to make it really obvious with a quick photo how big it is. Okay, so, oh, and if you're in the States, I've seen quite a few people in the States do this. They'll use like a penny or a quarter to as a like a scale model thing. Don't do that. The rest of the world doesn't know how big that is. You know, if you have to use something, use a ruler with inches and millimeters on it if you want to use something really precise. But the best thing to do is just show it in situ. Okay. So though, you know, make sure you have all of those photos to so people can get a real feel just from the images of your product. Number six is a marketing plan. Okay, so you've got your product sorted out. You know what kind of your branding is all about. You've got goals. You know what you want to achieve. How are you going to achieve it? How are you going to get the word out? Because if you don't have a plan for getting the word out, you might as well not even begin. And that might sound a bit harsh, but it's not a build it and they will come scenario. You know, there is so much out there online that you can't just put stuff up in a shop and expect people to find it miraculously. You have to do the work of bringing people to your business. So what are you going to do? So what is your brand story? We talked a little bit about branding earlier and weaving that into a story, because your brand story underpins all of your marketing. Marketing is just storytelling. Selling is another level of that. But marketing, you know, telling the world about what you do and what you make, it's just storytelling. So you have to know the story you're going to tell before you can tell it. So when you're clear on your brand story, you can tell that story, and working out how to tell that story is the key. So what strategies, what marketing strategies are you going to use to get the word out? Are you going to use PR? Are you going to, you know, reach out to bloggers and journalists and that sort of thing, and, you know, TV, whatever it might be, to tell your story? Are you going to use social media to tell your story, you know, directly to your customer? And I don't think that's something you can actually not do these days. It's kind of mandatory, really. Advertising, are you going to pay for any advertising? If so, what's the best place for you? Where are your customers? So this is, again, goes back to knowing where your ideal customers are, because then you can work out where you're going to connect with them. Like for me, for my wedding customers, there's a couple of kind of nice sort of bohemian style Australian wedding blogs. That's where my customers go to find out, you know, stuff about their potential wedding. So those are the places I want to get my stuff featured, right? I have a list of those. So think about, you know, where you want to connect with. And that's where I would advertise if I was going to spend advertising money. I also advertise a little bit on Facebook, because that's, you know, some of my customers. I have a nice customer base there for my other jewelry. So, you know, advertising and things like blogging. Now, blogging, it's one of those things, you know, people don't seem to blog as much anymore, perhaps. But it's still a really powerful tool. And the reason it's a powerful tool is because it's the one place you can tell your story in length. Okay, you can actually, you know, tell us about a new creation and give us lots of information and share lots of photos and tell us what you're doing and what you've been up to. That's what your blog is for. It's a place for you to tell your story and connect with your customers and help your customers. With a blog, you want to inform, educate, and entertain. So, you know, make sure you're doing at least one of those things with your blog. All right, so I'm not going to get too much more into this, because this is obviously a huge topic in and of itself, but just, you know, have some sort of idea of what you're going to do to get your new store out there into the world. Number seven, a venue. Where are you going to sell? So you may already have an online store, or you may not have had one before and you're still kind of humming and eyeing about where you want to set up. There are so many different places that you can set up a store. It's kind of overwhelming. So the thing you need to think about is, you know, what level of control do you want over your store and your website? What level of tech ability do you have? Or how much money can you spend to get someone else to build it for you? And how are you going to bring your customers to that venue? So, you know, start off with, well, you sell now. Is that working for you? Yes. Why not? And, you know, you might just want to expand there. If you don't sell anywhere, My first suggestion is always to start with an Etsy store. And I've said this for years, and the reason is because you don't have to know any of the tech stuff, okay? And you don't have to pay someone to set up a website for you. You just get on there. The most complicated thing you probably have to learn is how to put a banner together to put at the top of your shop. And then you just upload your photos and your descriptions, and you've got an online shop. And so it's easy and it's affordable because it's, you know, there's very little upfront cost. So as a beginner, as a testing ground, Etsy is a really good option. Now, if you, you know, there's other analogs to Etsy as well. Like in Australia, we have Made It. In the UK, they have Folksy, and there's DaWanda in Europe. I've sold on all of them, except Folksy, I don't think. So, you know, find someone like that. Again, I suggest Etsy just because it is the biggest and it is, you know, has a huge customer base. It's built up over the years. And it works really nicely and it has a lot of good features. So, you know, that is my first suggestion. And one thing that I suggest you don't do is focus on having a purely Facebook-based store. Now, there's nothing wrong with selling on Facebook as well. Like with my my current .com, Ethereal.com, where I have my own website and own shopping cart, I can actually, with an app, sort of put that shop on Facebook as well. So that's cool. I kind of get the best of both worlds there. But the reason I don't advise that is because you really don't have any control over it. You know, it's owned by somebody else who is perhaps not thinking your best interests when it comes to promoting your work. Okay, somewhere, you know, these things like Etsy and Made It and stuff like that, their whole deal is to promote your stuff, because by helping you sell more, they make more money, right? Whereas Facebook are more interested in other things. So it is an option, but I wouldn't make it your main option. And of course, the last option is having your own website, and whether you want to do that from scratch, whether you want to use something like Shopify or Squarespace that have kind of, you know, drag and drop designer websites that you can put together yourself is up to you. But having your own .com, your own website, I think is something we all need to aim for. Even if you have a shop on a venue like Etsy, I think you should still have a basic website of your own that you own, that you can blog on, that you can, you know, have control over. And it makes you look more professional. You're taking your business more seriously. You know, you don't have a Made It business or an Etsy business. You have a business that you sell on these venues. Okay, so that, think about it that way. You know, my business is Ethereal and I sell my jewelry through different venues. But Ethereal.com is my home and it reflects, you know, my business most fully and I have control over it. So your own website is definitely important to make happen if you want to sell online. Number 8, a mailing list. Now this goes for any business, but especially online, because it's still the most powerful marketing tool. I mean, you may have heard all these stories about emails dead. It's rubbish. It's not. We all still have email and we check it every day. So, you know, having access to people's email is the most powerful way we can connect with our customers and our potential customers. Obviously, you're going to go about doing this the right way. So you're going to, you know, sign people up in accordance with all the anti-spam laws. You know, they have to give you express permission to be added to your mailing list. You can't just take a customer's email who's bought something and put it on your mailing list. That is not cool. They have to actually deliberately sign up for it. So, you know, the best way to do that is to use some sort of mailing list software like Constant Contact or AWeber. I use MailChimp and I love it. It's great. It works really well for me. And you can set it up for free. I think it's free up to 2,000 subscribers or something like that. It may have changed. That was back when I signed up. But, you know, you can use it for free for a little period of time. And, you know, the benefit of that is, you know, when you have news, like I'm about to send out an email this afternoon because I'm going to be overseas for a couple of weeks, even though I'm leaving my shop open, I obviously won't be in my studio making orders. So I need to let my people know in advance that that's going to happen, so if they need to get an order in, they can do it before my cutoff. So things like that, you know, because social media, while it's absolutely brilliant and necessary, it, you know, people can ignore it, and they can ignore an email from you as well, really, but they're going to see it. Like, they might not see your Instagram post or your Facebook post or your pin or your tweet because there's just so much stuff flowing through their feeds, but they will check their email and they'll at least see that email from you, hopefully. And you know, that's a little bit more connection than you would have had otherwise with your customers. So set yourself up with some sort of email client. Put the link to your email sign up everywhere. I have it in my email, my own email signature, just like my normal email. I have it in my shop. I have it in thank you messages, all over the place. So make it really obvious and easy to sign up for your mailing list. And what incentive are you going to offer? I mean, we all have so much email these days. Why is somebody going to sign up to your mailing list? What are you going to give them in return for being on your mailing list? So, you know, obviously our number one dream is that they just love us so much that they want to hear from us. And ideally that's what we'll cultivate. But it's good to give people a little bonus or incentive to sign up in the first place. So, you know, I give 10% off their next order from myfreeol.com store only. They have to shop on my own website. They can't shop on one of my other venues. You might offer free shipping. You might offer, depends what you make, you know, you might offer a free consultation on something, a free ebook on, you know, for me, jewelry care or something like that. You know, just come up with something that you can give them as an incentive. You know, do you do monthly giveaways to your followers? Do you, you know, give them special discounts or sales a couple of times a year? Whatever it is, make it obvious and make it an incentive to sign up. Okay, number nine is time. This is, you know, another one of those things that I said was applicable no matter what sort of business you have, because you need a lot of it to build an online business. Now, the making is only going to be a small part of the time you spend if you want to build a business. I would say somewhere around 70 to 80% of your time when you're starting out is going to be on non-making activities. That may sound crazy, but you know, there's so much to learn and there's so much to set up and so much to maintain on the business side of things that you just need to be aware and prepared for that fact. And you may have already discovered that, and be cool with that. But if you haven't already discovered that, just be aware that that is the case, that it's, you're going to have to take a huge percentage of your time working on your business. Okay, rather than in the business making your products. So again, be realistic about this. Be honest with yourself. Go, okay, when do I do my work? When do I do my making work? When do I do my planning? When do I do my emails? When do I write my blog posts? When do I do my social media marketing? All those sorts of things. You know, when am I going to fit all this in? And how much time do you really have per day to devote to this business? Honestly, how much of your time can you set aside? And not only time, because, you know, you might only have an hour a day, but you are so super focused that you get an amazing amount of stuff done in that time. Or you might have 5 hours a day and you may be not quite so focused and end up getting no more done than the person who just had an hour. So it's not just time, but it's focus and energy as well. So you need to think, okay, well, I have these bits of time during the day or the week that I can work on stuff. When do I have the most energy and the most ability to focus, and what tasks would be better put in those times and those slots? Okay, so organize your time so that you make the most of the time you have based upon the amount of energy and focus you have and the amount of, you know, concentrated time you have to think about stuff and work on stuff. So are you currently spending your time wisely, or are you just kind of floating from thing to thing with no real plan and just putting out fires and dealing with stuff as it pops up rather than actually having a plan and thinking long term? Because having a plan for that sort of thing, you know, will be most effective. I mean, I'm full time in my job, so my whole life I plan every day I have a plan for when I'm going to do things. So, you know, I get up in the morning, I do half an hour on the exercise bike, then I do a bit of yoga and strength training, then I have a shower, then I come sit down with a cup of coffee and I plan my day, and then I work, and I have work hours. So generally speaking, I'll start work around 9 and I'll finish around 4, and I'll pretty much work the entire day. Like, I might have half an hour off for lunch, and I, you know, I'll get up and walk around a few times and stuff like that, but I pretty much work all that time. And then I stop and I turn off stuff and I go off and I do other things. So I read a book, or I go for a walk, or I hang out with Nick or whatever else. And, you know, I do other things that I want to do with my life. So, you know, and that's because I know that by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't care anymore. I've run out of energy and I've run out of focus. And if I was going to sit there and keep working, I would just be useless. So if I have a really busy time, what I'll do is I'll get up earlier in the morning because I know I have more energy. And then I might also schedule some time later in the evening. So I'll give myself a couple of hours off in that kind of 4 to 7 time frame and just relax. And then I'll come back and do a little bit more work later in the evening because I know I get a bit more energy again before I go to bed. So think about your own self and your rhythms and your, you know, what works for you when you feel more awake and when you don't, and try to fit your business tasks into those time frames. And number 10 is patience. Lots and lots and lots of patience. And you would have heard me say this one before. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You are not going to have a multi-million dollar successful business in a week or even a month or a year or maybe even 5 years. Okay, it's a long process. You have to be patient. You have to be dedicated. You have to be perseverant. You have to keep that energy going. You have to keep pushing. You have to keep working. It's not easy. It's not fast. It's not a quick fix. But you can do it. And it is, take it from me, it is worthwhile. Okay, so if you have all of this other stuff sorted out, you know what your goals are. You know what you're planning for. You have something to aim for. You have something to shoot for. You know where you're going. You know why. You can keep going. All right? So having, you know, knowing all of those things helps you when things get tough and things get boring and things get hard, because they will. And that's okay. It's perfectly normal. But small, consistent efforts every day beat sporadic blasts of work every so often. Okay? So if you can just set aside half an hour a day to work on your business, that's better than setting aside, you know, half a day once a month, because you're going to be making consistent progress every single day. And by keeping yourself in the mindset, you know, you're thinking about it constantly and ideas are happening and, you know, you're connecting with people. All of those things over time build up momentum. Okay, so small, consistent efforts every day beat sporadic blasts of work. And it will take you years to grow your business. Do you have the dedication to spend years growing your business? That's not to say you can't be, you know, making a full-time living from your business within a year or two. You can. If you have the time and the energy and the focus and you're savvy about it and you work really hard, you can make that happen. But we all have limitations and, you know, there's always other things we have to focus on in our life. So don't beat yourself up if things get in the way and life gets in the way, okay? Just bring yourself back every single time. It's like achieving anything in life. You know, there's obstacles and you just have to get through over them or through them or smash them bit to bits or push them out of the way or just accept them and then wait for them to pass over you before you move on. You know, and have that patience and know that it will happen and it is okay. You know, if you've been slogging away at this for a long, long time and nothing seems to be changing, then you need to change. There might be something that you've been holding on to or something you refuse to try or a direction you refuse to go, and that might be the thing that's stopping you from achieving what you want to achieve. So you need to really think, okay, well, do I need to change? Do I need to change something? Do I need to change something about me and the way I'm approaching this and the focus I'm putting on things in order to be a success and make a success for my business? Do I need to change things altogether? Or is it just not for me? You know, you might have this dream of having a business and that it'll be awesome and amazing and you'll be able to turn this thing that you love as a hobby into a business. But you may just decide, you know what? I just want to keep this as a hobby. I just want to go and get a job that I go and do. And then I come home and I do this for fun. Because, you know, if you do turn your hobby into a business, there will be times when you don't like it anymore because it's not just for fun anymore. It's work. And it will become your work. And if you can keep it as your work and keep the passion and the love for it, then that is amazing and that's awesome and you are, you know, doing really well. But if, you know, don't force it. You know, if it you just over and over again, and you just go, no, I just want to enjoy this. I don't want to analyze it all and do all this planning and all that sort of stuff. And that's perfectly okay, you know. And you might go, okay, well, I've been aiming for this full-time business. I've been aiming for that, but I want to spend my time doing other stuff as well, and I just can't do both. So I'm just going to make it a part-time thing, or, you know, I'm going to aim for earning enough money to, send my kids to the school, or to treat myself to a spa day once a month or something. Whatever it is, it all comes back to what you want, what your definition of success is, and what you want to achieve. So with all of that said, don't let the mountains daunt you. You'll see the mountains in the distance, and it'll be a hard slog to get up them. But man, when you get to that top and you see the next five mountains, you take a moment and you enjoy that. And you go, hey man, I've scaled this mountain and I am awesome for scaling this mountain. And then I'm just going to keep on keeping on, and I'm going to walk up and down those next 5, 10, 15, 20 mountains, because I know what I want and I know that I'm going to get there. So when it comes to all of this, don't let the mountains daunt you, okay? So I know I've covered a lot in this workshop today. Do go back, go over it a couple of times. You know, there's a lot of different elements here. You know, pretty much every single one of those things I could pull out into an entire workshop. So go back through, go through the fundamentals, really think about your business, and then focus on the things that you need to get right to start selling online. And then if you get to that point and you have questions, make sure to ask them. Leave them for me in the comments underneath the workshop post, or again, pop them in the Facebook group, and I will get in there whenever I can and answer your questions about what we've talked about today. And I'm sure the other Thrive Circle members will chime in and give you their advice as well. And that's what it's all about. So I hope you enjoyed that one. I hope, you know, that's helped you to come up with some ideas and some goals, and, you know, write all this stuff down. Don't just think it, you know, get a journal, get a workbook, whatever it is, and actually go through all those questions and write down your answers, and it will make a huge difference. And I'll see you next month, guys. Bye.